are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have Tony Pearson. Oh, my goodness. Tony, how are you?
I'm doing good, man.
Oh, my God. You know.
Still hanging in there.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. Oh, man. What are you, 29 or what?
Yeah, I'm 30 in my mind, but I'm 62.
Unbelievable. I gotta tell you something. It's really something to meet the people that you followed in the magazines, because, you know, you develop, I don't know about you, but like with me, you develop a relationship with those people that are in the magazines, you know, via the magazines, of what you read and everything, you know. So it's really interesting when you finally get to meet them in person and to see if that, you know, what you learned through magazines
Right. Matches
up with the personality in person. And I have to Right. Tell you something, because sometimes it's very different.
As you know, yes.
Sometimes it isn't. And listen, the minute I met you, when somebody told me that you were there, I said, take me to him.
Right. Because,
you know, I followed you back in those days. I mean, and the minute I met you, I knew who you were. That's the truth. You were just, you know, I knew exactly who I was talking about. It was like what I saw in the magazines and what I read.
Right.
You were just, you know, authentic. And I just love that, because there's too many, and just in every industry, sure, that really let you down because of the persona that they have, and they're not just that same person, you know?
Right. But I just got to keep it real, you know, just be me.
Yeah. No, and listen, I just really appreciate that, you know? Right.
Because, thank you. Yeah. So the universe, we met at the universe.
In
November, right?
At the Vegas. We met there. I forget who told me that you were there, and I said, "Well, I got to go down right now and meet you." Yeah. You know, and then luckily, you told me about your book, and right, I have it, and so anyway. But yeah, I like to talk about the good old days with you. Now, when I started, I'm 64, so I'm a little bit older than you. So you started. How old were you when you first started training?
I was 18.
18.
Yeah, I had a major knee injury and from wrestling. I was on the wrestling team.
Yeah.
And I was wrestling 132-pound weight class, 138, blew my knee out. So that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And I made my way to the weight room.
Yeah.
And kind of rehab. This is 1974.
Yeah, I saw that in your bio. So with me, see, I didn't start training until I was 25.
Okay.
I mainly got into, we all get into the sport and into weight training for different reasons, you know.
Right.
The reason why I got into it is because I was an athlete all my life, playing football, played college level. And then the next thing you know, I got injured to the point where I couldn't play anymore. It was a pretty big injury. And, well, heck, you know, after being an athlete all those years, all of a sudden I found myself like in the worst shape of my life. I mean, unbelievably, you know.
Right, right.
Saw my buddy that hadn't seen me for a while, and he goes, "What the hell happened to you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, you're in horrible shape. Well, I guess I didn't notice, you know. Sometimes you don't notice.
No, you don't. You don't know how you look. I've been there. I've got it before, and I go, man.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess I've been playing tricks on myself when I look into the mirror, you know.
Right.
But so I'm gonna go kind of in reverse order with you here. So your pro debut was the Mr. World in 79.
1979 in New York,
okay.
The WBBG, what's his name from the, oh my God, yeah, they ran the show.
I don't know.
Dan Lurie.
Oh, Dan Lurie. Oh God, I forgot about that name.
Right, Dan Lurie.
Yeah, I thought that when I saw that the Mr. World, I competed in a world event in Europe, in Belgium. So I thought this was maybe a NABBA event.
It was a WABA.
WABA.
I won New York, WBBG, and then I ended up winning the WABA World in Italy, Verona.
Ah, so they called that WABA?
WABA is Noubre, Serge Noubre. Serge Noubre had a federation, WABA.
See, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so research it. WABA, yeah. And it was amateur. I won it in Italy.
Okay, so when you won the Mr. World, do you remember the top five?
No, but I know it was France and Italy next to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a tough show. Those guys were shredded to the bone. Thank God I was to it those days.
Yeah.
In Europe, they were really cut. I mean, really cut.
I noticed that too, because when I went back there in that Belgium event, same thing. They had 90 competitors there, and it was a pretty big event, and they were in good shape.
He was in great shape. I mean, thank God I had good genetics, and I got real cut real fast too. So
yeah,
that's what helped out. But
and you said you told me about the organization was. So what about the IFBB at that time? I'm assuming they were around, right?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
IFBB. You know, you don't know my story. You'll get most of that when you read my book. But
yeah,
I won this American 78, which is AAU. And then things happened. I got suspended from IFBB. And
is there any particular reason? Do you want to talk about that or not? Because I don't know the story.
No, I don't mind. Well, I didn't have a contract with Redraft that won, which most guys do get in Mr. America. You know, Mr. America, those years meant something. It was, it was to win that title. It was a big deal. So I was banking on getting an endorsement, which I didn't get, a contract, exhibitions. I didn't get anything. So I went homeless. Homeless again. So national champion, homeless, and I got a call from a different federation. We need a guest poser. And I said, yes, because I'm starving. I'll be there.
I'll be darned.
I go pose, and I got a telegram overnight. If you pose tomorrow, you're suspended for life.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I got the telegram, and I looked at it, and I go, I have no choice but to pose. What am I going to do, starve?
Right.
So I pose, and I got a life suspension hanging over me. So
that's a pretty wicked deal there.
How I ended up in New York, and that's how I ended up in France, in WABA.
I'll be darned.
For a couple of years. That lasts for a couple of years. So I won the shows over there, and then I wrote a letter to the Federation, IVV Federation.
Yeah.
Got reinstated. So.
Oh, okay.
So that got me back into the IVV, 1981.
Okay.
I'm back.
So they started competing more in the IFBB shows?
Yeah, strictly IFBB shows at that point, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then until the WBF came along in 1991. Vince McMahon had a federation called the WBF. So it was me and 12 other guys, IFBB guys.
Yeah.
Went there, and I competed for a couple of years, and it fell apart.
Well, you know something, I may have been at the same, I went to the FIBO. Tom Platz was somebody that he worked for me for 1 year. I wrote this. I wrote this training course called Big Beyond Belief.
Okay.
It was a series of training courses that I wrote for bodybuilding. And I wanted somebody, a name that could help me promote this thing, because I was just kind of new in the industry, you know?
Right, right.
So I just got on a plane one day. And I flew to Germany. I knew nothing at this point. I just thought, I'm just going to go to this FIBO. Like a great place to go have a booth, right?
Right, yes.
Well, when I got there, I realized that, anyway, I'm on the plane there. There were like five pros that were on the plane. And I can't think of all their names, but I got to know them. Because I thought, well, I have a captive audience. And, well, so when we landed in Germany, I'm just following the guys. I didn't know where the hell I was going. Right. Well, guess who picked up all the pros? Platz. This is when he was working. He had just signed a deal with McMahon. He was kind of like the face of the WBF. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, he's the one that called me when I was hanging out in Germany doing nothing and says, hey, Vince starting a new federation. We need some guys who know how to pose. I recommended you. So that's how I got the job.
I'll be darned.
Down in Germany. Yeah.
I'll be darned. Yeah, so I'm following the guys down, and Platz is picking them up. He goes, you know Tom as well as I do.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, hey, you need a ride? Because he saw that I was, like, walking around lost, I guess, you know. I must have looked that way. And I said, yeah. So I was just, like, tagging along, you know.
Right.
This hotel, and, well, he's the one that got me into the FIBO. He goes, you got to have tickets to get in.
Okay. So you had never been to FIBO before?
Never. It was like I did it like this, just off the top, you know, random. Jumped on this plane. It was
That was 1992.
Yeah.
I never forget it. So, yeah. That place was packed, right? It was insane. My God.
I just couldn't.
Insane? Yeah.
I could not believe that. Oh, my God. I've been to some of these shows that they put on around here.
Yeah.
But, man, that thing, like, it dwarfs them.
That thing was huge. Every year, it was huge. It was massive, wall to wall. You can't even walk.
It's hard to even explain it. I mean, to you describe it.
No, I used to stand in one spot for 8 hours signing autographs and never move.
I could relate.
I would go to the restroom to hide.
Oh, God. Well, you know, the funny thing was, is Platts and I, we actually did a skit together as a part of, you know, we were there promoting the Big Beyond Belief. Tom was the face of it.
Okay.
I was on his coattails, you know, because who else to learn from than that guy, you know?
Yeah.
And but that, actually that at that time, that was like a year later we went back. But during that time when he was working for Vince, he told me, I said, look, Tom, I had to make fast work of what I was doing over there. And I said, look, I have this book and I want you to be the face of it. And he goes, I can't do it. I'll do it in a year. I thought, okay, whatever. He's blowing me off.
Right.
Well, sure enough, I mean, after that deal, the contract, he called me up, and then we did this thing. Then we went back over there and started doing all the stuff that you're talking about.
Okay.
But yeah. So you were there then, probably when I went there.
Oh yeah, I was posing. Yeah.
Son of a gun.
WBF, we had a stand, and all the guys were there posing.
Yeah. You were a great poser. I mean, you were. I know that you have a beautiful body, but you can show it off in the. You know, in the right way. So there's no doubt that you should have been there. But so what do you think with the WBF like that? Why do you think that you know, how come it didn't continue on? What do you think happened with that deal?
Honestly, I don't know. There's a lot of rumors going around that I don't want to repeat, but it just all of a sudden Vince decided he's going to let the guys go.
Is that right?
I remember that day he called everyone to the boardroom and says, well, guys, it's been fun working with you guys. And we got to cut the tie, so.
No kidding.
That was it.
Right to the chase, huh?
Yeah. Yo, Vince is very straightforward. So it's a good thing. I like that. You know, we had the magazine. We had our own TV show. With that network every Saturday morning. And the magazine. So it was really taking off. You know, we all had character name like the wrestlers.
Right, right.
I'm the Jet Man.
The Jet Man, huh?
Yes. The Wild Lats spray is going to fly away or something.
That's funny. No, I mean, I like the concept. It worked in wrestling. You know?
Exactly. So, of course, Vince would say, everyone has characters. Mike Christian was the Dark Angel. No, Mike Christian was the Iron Warrior.
Yeah, Dark Angel was...
Aaron
Baker, yeah.
Right, yeah. So we all had character names. That is so fun. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, do you keep up with any of those guys? I mean, Mike Christian's like a blast from the past. I forgot about him.
Right? Yeah.
Is he still around?
I just saw him at the Olympia. He was there. Okay. We had a booth. There was a booth, Legends booth. Lee Haney was the main guy, of course. He's there, and Samir is there.
Oh Mike my goodness!
There. I'm there. Yeah, all the guys are hanging out in the booth all day.
Yeah. Wow, that is something else.
You know, you get to see them. It's been a while.
What's Aaron doing these days?
Aaron, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Recently, I saw a picture of him on Facebook. He doesn't go public much.
Yeah. I think I did time flies and you forget stuff, you know? Yeah. I actually did a video with Ronnie Coleman.
Okay.
Lee Priest.
Wow.
Aaron Baker. There were four or five guys there. And I'm, again, I don't know. It's been too many years. But the reason that we had these guys on, because these guys were top five or, you know, top competitors at that point. Those are guys I was able to meet at that point.
Right.
But the whole idea behind that video was to, and we digitized the guys' voices. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't want their faces to be seen, mm-hmm. because our stance in the industry was to talk straight to our clientele. We wrote these training courses.
Right.
And it was mainly to be, you know, I was really, and I still am, big on making it, you know, learning how to train right first before you get on the other stuff, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And one of the points that we were trying to make in this video was that to the public, it was that you, at that time, it was surprising how the guys that were at the amateur levels seemed to be abusing the stuff a lot more than the guys that were actually at the very top.
True.
You know? Yes. I don't know if that was the case, but that would seem like that's what we learned. So we brought these guys on, and they were all digitized, but Aaron was one of them. Lee Priest said, I don't give a damn if my face is on screen. I think he's always been like that, right?
He's always like that.
Yeah.
He just tells it like it is.
He tells it like it is, and he told it like it was. Yeah, that cracked me up. Oh, God, that's hysterical. So,
he's a great guy. He's a good guy.
He's in Australia. I see him on, I think, social media every once in a while, right?
Yeah, he just did a movie thing for Generation Iron.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think I saw him in that deal.
That's
so funny. So when you mentioned the Pro Universe being your best win, what did you mean by that?
Well, it's, you know, at that point, even now, is the biggest title I ever won. So, you know, I won the world and I won Mr. America, but to win Mr. Universe, the Pro Universe, that's the biggest one you can get next to the Olympia.
Okay.
So.
And that Pro Universe that you that was NABBA.
NABBA in London, yes.
Okay.
I came second the first year in 79. I went over, and I lost to Enlulu from Turkey. And we posed down for 15 minutes, toe-to-toe.
Oh my God. That's a long time.
It was just battle.
So that was a...
That was the amateur 79 universe.
Came second. Okay. So he was back in London.
Right.
Who were do you remember that, like the top bodybuilders? Like did they pick like a top five or a top three at the very end when you guys
were... Top three. It was me, Dave Johns.
I remember him.
And Ian Lawrence from England.
Yeah. Pretty good shape. You guys come in pretty good shape.
Everybody was in top shape.
Incredible. How much were you weighing back in those days?
185, maybe 190, soaking wet.
Now, is that...
really cut.
Yeah.
I was known for no waistline, no waist.
Yeah. I know you had like the... I would say classical physique, I mean, to the max. Wide shoulders, narrow waist. I
appreciate it. Yeah. Aesthetically.
Yeah.
I never tried to get big. I didn't want to be big. I just want to be big enough to win. And I always told people that. So I don't want to be big. And so in the gym, no one notices me. Even backstage, they don't notice me. Okay. And I take a warm-up suit and start pumping up. They go,
Yeah, you just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, because bodybuilding is an art form. And I see myself as an artist. If everything's in proportion, present it well, in great shape, you know how to work the crowd. And all those things plays into winning. In those days, it meant a lot.
Yeah.
You can outpost a guy and win.
Yeah.
Outwork him.
You know, the thing about that is, you know, you can be in the best shape of your life, but if you don't know how to show it, you just fall.
You're gonna lose. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right. And a lot of guys, they don't understand that. They don't pay attention to the detail like that.
Right.
Right.
I paid attention to all the details and I studied all the other pros. I copied them a little bit and then try to make it my own pose.
That's smart, man. So smart. And of course, back then, which is, I think it's a little bit different now, is that you had to choreograph a routine for what, a minute and a half? Is that how long the routine was? Or at that level, was it like longer?
As long as you want as a pro.
Okay, as a pro, yeah.
On the amateur level, that you had 30 seconds. Was it 30 seconds? Yeah, I think. The 60 seconds, you had a minute. So at the America, quick story, Mr. America contest, pose down. I got my 1 minute. I'm on stage. The curtain's open. And I had, but my routine was 2.5 minutes. So at the end of the 1 minute, it's in the book, they closed the curtains on me. The announcer's going, thank you.
Really?
I kept posing. I didn't stop posing.
Even so behind the
curtains reopened, I'm still hitting my shots.
Oh, God.
So, but that's, you know, you're competing. You're in battle, you know. It's one shot to do it. So I kept posing.
Hey, you got to take advantage of the moment. That's for damn sure.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah, what I was going to mention to you was that when I was coming through, we had like a minute and a half, and then they cut it down to a minute.
Yes.
You know?
I think you're right. It was a minute and a half. I think you're right. Yeah.
90 seconds.
And yes. That's it.
So who influenced you in the way you learned how to pose, or did you do it yourself?
In the beginning, I couldn't pose at all. I remember my first trainer back in St. Louis. He says, I'm going to put you in a contest. Okay, I'm so excited. He says, pose for me. So I hit a double bicep shot. And Zach words, my grandmother can pose better than that. So, that was like a wake-up call for me. I said, I'm going to be good at this too. So, I came up with a routine. And when I got to California, I started copying other people. It's just practice.
Yeah.
And then I realized I have a natural move for this. I can move. I can gracefully move my feet.
Yeah.
So it became an art. And then I worked with this guy, Jimmy Caruso. You know the name?
It sounds familiar, but I'm not sure.
In Toronto, he worked, you know, he was a photographer too. He did all the pictures of Arnold. You see Caruso on a lot of Arnold.
Maybe that's where I've seen him.
Yes. But he taught me how to pose. He spent 4 hours with me in the studio in Toronto and said, this is where your knee, your toe, your finger, your position should be in your hips.
Yeah.
For 4 hours, he taught me and I never forgot it.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of took that and just kind of worked my own moves, my own timing.
Yeah.
Shot to shot. I still watch Zane's pose because the way he set up the transitions.
Yeah.
It's just the little thing I'm catching that he's doing.
It's a beautiful
toe,
thing.
His knee, his hip, turns. You know, it's an art.
I don't think any of that's around anymore, do you?
No, in a classic physique, they're trying to bring it back, but the guys need work, because I look at their photos and their posing, and I go, this is off, that's off.
Yeah.
If you just drop his hip, just bring his elbow forward a little bit, you're trying to give an illusion how bigger than you really are.
Yeah.
I became good at that, because people run backstage after my shows, look at me and go, was that you out there? Because I look so small.
That's so funny.
The illusion you create on stage, but hitting your poses correctly.
Yeah.
And you hide in your flaws.
Yeah. One of the first guy that I sort of got involved with at the gym is a gym owner. And he made that comment one time. He said, you know, bodybuilding is an illusion. And I just, you know, I looked at him and I thought, what the hell are you
talking about?
What? Well, then, of course, you know, based on what you're saying, I started learning what he meant. But when he first said that, it was like, you know, he didn't, well, I probably wouldn't have understood it anyway, but I had a, you know, I learned that through going through the sport. You start learning things like that.
Yes, you learn. Yes.
You know,
I didn't know that coming in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, he told me I should have been a powerlifter instead of getting up on stage as a bodybuilder. So I said, oh, okay. Then because you said that, now I am going to compete in bodybuilding, you know,
exactly, just to show you.
Yeah. I have that type of mentality. But one of the things with regards to posing, of course, you know, Arnold, Stay Hungry or, I don't know, Pumping Iron, one of those. Mm-hmm. And he talked about that transitions. And I don't know, you know, if everything he said actually happened, but he actually enlisted a ballet teacher to teach him how to, this is where I started learning. He said, you have to understand that people are watching you even when you're transitioning.
Yes. And
so many guys just, you know, they just.
Step and turn.
Yeah.
But you never stop moving.
Right.
So you keep your feet and your hands moving the whole time.
Yeah.
So they're following your hands as you turn. The next pose, they don't see your feet moving.
Yeah.
And then you got to be very graceful. You just kind of glide.
It's what an amazing difference it makes, you know? Yeah. And then
it's like a dance. I always say it's like a dance.
True that. And I think what a lot of people don't realize. I mean, when I first saw you guys up on stage, I thought, oh my God, these guys are all perfect. Well, the truth is that you weren't. You have everybody has their flaws, their weak points. They just are really great at learning how to minimize all that on stage. Is that right? Yeah,
exactly. You hide your flaws and show only your strong points.
Crazy.
You never look at your competitor. You look straight ahead. Let him challenge you. You don't challenge him.
Jedi mind tricks, huh?
Yeah, just straight ahead. Hit your shots and stay within yourself. Don't try to follow them, because he's hitting the best shot. You might not be able to match it.
Right.
Let him follow you. Let him chase you.
That's the when you start really learning the ins and outs of that sport and how to set yourself apart from the next guy.
Right. And when you're in a lineup, always be a half a foot ahead of your guy. Step a half a foot ahead of him. So when you take the picture, you look bigger.
I did. You know something? I never knew that. I wish I would have had you around then. That's too good. That's too funny, man. I love that stuff. Oh, my goodness.
It's a science. It's a real.
Yeah, it really is. Zane sounds to me like he was one of the guys that you thought was like one of the better posers, yeah?
Yes.
Is he still around?
Yes, he's like 75, 77, yeah.
Is that right?
Still around. I still watch his posing. Still watch.
He had a vacuum, didn't he? That was just like amazing.
Incredible. This is the only guy. Well, they said my back vacuum's compared to his, and that's a compliment, a huge compliment. But he's the only guy that can hit the vacuum shot and contract his pecs and intercostal serratus at the same time.
Oh, my goodness.
I tried to do it. I can't do it.
That's good.
I can hit the vacuum really well, but I can't contract everything at the same time.
That's body control to the max. It's
real body control, and it took me a long – I studied him. I go, that's what he's doing. Mm. Just recently, I just figured out, that's what he's doing.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Wow.
Is it the challenge of that one pose? Just to do the vacuum along is very challenging because you're not breathing.
Yeah.
Then have the presence to flex your legs, hit the chest, hit the intercostals and lats at the same time. People don't understand.
No, people don't understand.
No, because you make it look so easy.
Yeah.
When you rehearse.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what that means right there, making it look so easy, making the difficult look so easy. I'm into fashion now, Tony, believe it or not. I mean, I would have never thought that. I've taught myself how to dress. It's a long story. I don't want to get into it. But the point is this. I was very influenced and drawn to the Italians in the way they dress. And they have a term for it. They call sprezzatura, I don't know if you ever heard that.
Yes.
It's a nonchalant, it's a studied carelessness. It's making the hard look easy.
Yes.
And the hard is never easy, is it? You have to do hours and hours and years of perfecting how you made that look easy. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes.
Most people don't know that.
It takes a lifetime to make it look easy.
It's like, how? It's like,
you do it with a smile.
So I've had some people say, well, how, you know, that doesn't look like that hard to do. You know,
try it.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, I would do that. I say, okay, here, I want you to do this. I want you to, you know, hold your feet together, flex your calves, your quads, your stuff, everything, you know.
Right. Everything contracts at one time.
Right.
And you transition to the next pole doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Pleasant. You're looking pleasant in your face. There's no, you're not frowning and looking
all instead crazy. Instead of look like you're having a bowel movement.
Right, right. Just make it look easy and you're dying. Trust me.
Well, I don't know about you, but after these shows where, you know, especially when you get like in the pose downs and it gets pretty crazy, I was so sore for like the next like whole bunch of days, you know?
Yeah. At least a couple of days, you're sore from head to toe.
Yeah.
You're contracting so hard on those shots.
Yeah, you got
to. In the pose down, the comparison shots, you're giving everything you've got. I've collapsed backstage after.
Have you really?
You walk backstage and you drop to the floor.
I can understand that. I mean, you got adrenaline pumping.
Yes.
You know, in the moment. And then you have to still make it look graceful. Oh, my God.
Yes. I mean, your body fat's, what, 3%? You're dehydrated. You got nothing left. And and sometimes in a pose down, they don't let you get a rest. They call the next guy next to you.
Yeah.
Or the next guy next to you. You got to hit that round 3 times before you get a break. Yes.
Incredible. You know, one of the things I really liked, especially towards the end, listen, I nowhere near where you guys were, you know, but I had my moment, man. I mean, I really enjoyed competing, being an athlete all my life.
Right.
And, you know, it got to the point where in the sports world, we talk about the game slowing down. And that just simply means that as you, through repetition being the mother of skill, this is when I really started enjoying my sport and my craft, because I, like you, realized that this is artistic. And I really got into that. And Tony, there was nothing more fulfilling to me than to be on that stage and to be so comfortable up there and to slow down. Because one of the things I was taught, wrestling again, the guy at that gym that told me I should be a powerlifter, well, he came on board and supported me at the end of the day. But one of the things he told me, he said, Leo, he said, when you're on stage and going through your routine, do less poses than more. And he said, slow down. Even when you think you're going slow, slow down some more because you're moving too fast on stage. Did you notice that too?
Yes, absolutely. I see it all the time. Guys, they're going in and out of the pose too fast. You don't get to see the pose.
It's frustrating.
It's frustrating. That. Yeah. Hold that shot. Hold the shot.
And then transition slowly into the
next one. Yeah. I'm timing in my mind. I hit the shot, double bicep front. I know exactly when to move.
Yeah.
Just enough to know when to move.
Yeah.
So it's just timing.
Sure. And timing. When you do it so many times over and over again, it's that internal clock.
Exactly. You're not counting. You just know.
Yeah.
Transition. And always be unpredictable.
Yeah,
you get your attention. You keep their attention because they don't know what you're going to do next.
Ah,
that's how you get them.
So how could you be unpredictable in this case when you had again, I'm asking you like somebody who doesn't really know, and I don't know in this case, but how could you choreograph a routine and still be unpredictable? How does that work out?
Well, for the audience, in the compulsory round, you know you're going to do your 7 shots back in those days. There were 7 compulsory poses you must do. But you turn that into a routine as well. So you just transition. You know the next call, side check, tricep, and you just make a routine out of it.
Seven shots.
You don't just step and turn, hit the shot. No.
Right.
It's a routine. And the free poses where you be unpredictable because they don't know what you're going to do next.
Oh, I see.
That's how you keep their attention. Double bicep, lat spread, most muscles, vacuum, twisted. You don't know where it's going to come from next.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. That's so funny. Wow. When you did the Mr. America, did you do that? You won it twice, right?
No, only once.
Oh, once. I thought I saw.
Where Mr. You World twice. The world twice.
Oh, I screwed up there. Did you train alone or did you have partners or both?
I had partners. 1978, Ghost Gym was on fire that
ooh,
year.
Ooh, ooh!
Man, about that. Santa Monica.
Oh, man.
Second in Broadway. It was on fire. All the champions, Tom Platz is killing himself over in the corner.
Oh, man.
Mike Mensu, Robbie Robinson going crazy in there, Manuel Perry. The gym was just packed with all champions and all your competitors.
Yeah.
You from across the room, you're staring back at them. I mean, you, the music was crazy. Oh, we went to see Rocky. The first Rocky won, the whole gym went to the theater.
Oh, God, that must have been
wild. Such a great movie. Yeah. The next day, we go to the gym. And Kent King was the manager. He turned the music up, blasting, loud as he can get it. Rocky. It was, you know, we all can relate because we're all starving, trying to make a living. You want to win some titles. I didn't have any titles. So it just motivated you.
Yeah.
So every day that music was blasting and we were training like madmen.
Oh, man.
I'm doing like 9 plates on the leg press, stand up, 100-pound barbell lunges, supersetting back and forth. I burnt out all my training partners.
Oh, man. I wish I could have been there, Tony. Because I got a little bit of that because, like I said, when I started training, I got up to the regional level.
Okay.
Tom and I already had this relationship going. I said, Tom, I'm going to put myself in your hands. I want to go farther. I couldn't go anymore because I didn't have enough. I needed more information. Somebody who knew more than me.
Yes.
So I took myself under my wings with Tom. Oh, my goodness. And awesome. I'll tell you what, it was scary to train with him.
Yes. For anybody.
And what I started picking up on was that there was a look in his eye. The first time that we went and did squats, I'll never forget this. So he comes in and we're at Gold's Gym, which for me, you know, Tony, I won some titles, but my greatest event was doing a photo shoot in Gold's Gym because at that time there weren't as many champions as you're talking about, but there were still quite a few pros in there. And that was intimidating for me. You know, I'm a guy that's like regional, national level.
Right.
Type of quality. And I actually did feel like I belonged there. That was my proudest moment was that photo shoot.
Okay.
With Tom Platz, you know.
Wow.
But when we were training for that a little bit, because I was training with him to get ready for a show that I won in the Nationals.
Right.
And, oh, my God, the first time we walked into Gold's Gym, Tom, you know, he does this thing. He goes, I'm not feeling too good today. Well, you know, I didn't know him that well.
Don't let that fool you.
Yeah, I didn't know him that well. We had 3 plates on each side on the squat. He cranks out 27 reps. I said, okay, now I know what's going on here. You know? And then from that point, it was just worse. You know?
Yeah.
He was nuts, man. And it was something in the eye. Something changed.
Yes.
I thought, uh-oh. Yeah. This is going to get not only real, but real ugly.
Real ugly, very quickly.
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. I can only imagine having a lot of you guys in there. I mean, that in itself, that energy, I mean, that turned everybody on, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't wait to get to the iron. I mean, it's like I usually yell at my training partner, put it down so I can pick it up.
No kidding.
Give me some of that, yeah.
Oh, man. I don't, you know, look, I'm still a member at Gold's Gym.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, honestly, I go back and I see the environment in there. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is sick. You know, there's no energy in there. I mean, I think social media has changed some of that.
Yes.
You know, everybody's walking around with these damn, and I like social media, but in the gym.
Right. Yeah. When I go to the gym, I go to work.
To work.
I don't check my phone. I don't drink water.
To work.
I say hello and I don't talk. I mean, I'm really focused on what I got to do. And I'm still serious about that.
Well, look, your physique is obvious that you are still serious about that. You look amazing, man.
Thank you. I mean, I can't train heavy anymore. I do a volume of reps, a lot of sets, and I rest maybe 30 seconds between sets. So for about an hour, you know, I'm moving.
Yeah.
Every day I do something. I do a little bit every day.
Look, quick story, but Tom. And I've been around the gym at this point. We were training, going through these days where he was killing me, basically. So we're doing these damn T-bar rows, you know? Yeah. Oh, and Tom says
– I know.
Tom says to me, he goes, hey, can you go get a breathing bench? And I'm thinking, what the hell's a breathing bench? I mean, I've been around the gym a little bit at this point, maybe 8 years.
So you're looking lost, like, where's the bench?
I didn't want to ask him. I did not want to ask him. Finally, I said, Tom, what the hell's a breathing bench?
Oh, a bench to sit down on.
Of course, he told me it was just a flat bench, you know, and we rolled that up there. So we did these T-bar rows, and then it gets worse. He puts on 75 pounds, three 25-pound plates.
Yeah.
And cranks out 75 reps. Yeah, And I'm thinking, oh, okay. Well, we did like something – we ended up doing something ridiculous, something like 14 sets, you know, and we never did less than 50 reps. I mean, Tony –
oh, my God.
Yeah, that was just a T-bar row. And then we did lat pull downs and all this cheating and all this, you know, that he tried. Tom would go, you know, hey, I went home, you know, because I, at that time, I was living 200 miles away. I lived near Fresno, California.
Okay, okay.
Between Fresno and Bakersfield.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So I had this workout with Tom, this back workout. I woke up the next day, Tony, my arms were bent and I couldn't straighten them. I couldn't straighten them. I mean, legit, I had to go to work. I couldn't straighten my freaking arm. I had to call my wife. I said, listen, you got to bring some hot towels or something. I can't
look like this. Can't move my arms.
That's a Tom Platz story.
Tom Platz workout for you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and I got to watch. I watched him every day on the corner. He was training by himself. He's just like a beast. I remember him doing those incline dumbbell, like the 140s. He just... grinding them out. He couldn't get it up. He get one side up and he's fighting to get the other side up.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible. I mean, he ended up getting hurt pretty good there. Didn't he pop like
a... Yeah, he tore his bicep. He tore his lat, I think. Yeah. You know, he didn't care, though.
I know he didn't. Wasn't he the guy that put on 135 and he wanted to see how long he could actually squat, and he did for like 10 or 15 minutes straight? Did you hear that story?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that. He put 135. He was curious. I wonder how many reps or how much time that I can just. Yeah. He got to the point where he almost like passed out. Somebody had like grabbed him. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
That's how far he went into that stuff, you know?
Yeah, he was on the deep end.
The deep end.
I trained with the other guys. I trained with Bill Grant, and my main trainer was Robbie Robinson. I got to train with Robbie.
Robbie, another beautiful physique, huh?
Yeah. At the time, he was like king of the gym. Come on, 77, 78, 79. Yeah. He was the number one guy in the gym.
Is that right?
No one. And you stare at every time you see Robbie every day, you stare at him like, I see the guy every day. Why am I staring here? Because his physique was so freaking phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, the hamstring and the bicep and his waistline, and he trained like a madman. Never said a word.
Did he train with a lot of volume? Like, what was the typical?
It was usually 8 to 10 reps.
Yeah.
Max 12. But heavy. Heavy.
As heavy as you could go for those reps.
Yes, in perfect form.
Yeah.
Giant setting, where you set up three stations, like dips, dumbbell press, and bench, and you repeat it, and you repeat it. It was just like T-bar and superset with pull-up, wide grip pull-ups.
Yeah.
Back and forth. It was just endless squatting. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh. So I was back in Rhode Island hanging out, and he called me. He says, TP, you want to work out?
Well, he said something to you.
Yeah, no, this is years later. Oh, yeah. All in America, I was living in Rhode Island for some reason, hanging out. And Robbie called me in 1980, 81. He says, you want to work out, TP?
Oh, my goodness.
Build the next plane out. That's what I said.
Is that right?
I trained twice a day for about 8 months, tortured every single day, but loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
Because he was so strict about form, weight, focus. All of these things, and he's sitting there watching you as you're doing your set. If he said, give me 12, he means 12. Don't stop at 9. Now you owe me one. Ooh. So he taught you discipline. 12 Ooh. Means 12.
Yeah.
It means control. He says your last rep should be like the first rep. So it doesn't matter if you deadlift at 500 pounds off the floor, it's got to be perfect.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, this is what bothers me. I hate to say it. Deadlifting out of a rack. Put the bar on the floor.
Seriously.
Pick it up off the floor.
I agree.
Don't touch the floor when you lower that weight.
Ooh, baby.
That's deadlift.
That's deadlift.
That's continuous tension on the muscle.
That's right.
That's how you get this great back. And Ronnie Coleman has one of the greatest backs of all time.
Boy, did he.
Because he was a weightlifter before. He did deadlifts off that floor. Yeah. Off the floor.
Yeah. No.
It's not a half squat, half dead. It's called deadlift. So your knees, your legs are not bending.
Right.
And from your waist.
Hey, didn't Robbie end up winning like the Mr. Olympia like in older age?
Won the Masters.
Yes.
94, 95, I think he won it. Yeah, he won it.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he's 73. And he's still training at Gold's Gym Venice.
Is he really?
Yeah, and he just posted a video a few months ago. He was pushing a sled. I'm sure he had 500 pounds on it. So he's pushing this sled. Robbie Robinson, 73.
Oh, my goodness.
He puts it down and looks into the camera and goes, if you put your mind to it, you can do anything you want to do.
Oh, God.
That's all he said, that voice. And I go, he's right.
A man of few words.
Yeah, very few words.
Yeah.
I would train with him, and then he'd go, two more. I mean, he didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. He was just, you knew what you had to do.
Yeah.
Not playing around.
Yeah. You know, I don't, when I go to goals, like I said, I go down there, I go in spurts, you know, because I'm still living 200 miles away.
Okay. But
again, I'm still a member and I like going there. I just like going there. That's all, you know?
Yeah. It brings back memories.
It does. It brings back memories. I mean, the environment and the atmosphere is way different, but it still brings back memories, you know, and I like that. Yeah. It's just nice distraction when I'm doing my cardio. I look at the wall and I don't know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. The picture's still up there. When
yeah. The- yeah. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because of the, like what time of the day do you train? Do you have a certain time?
You know, I have clients and they're more important than my training these days.
So right.
Whatever chance I get.
So back in the day, what was your.
Me and Robbie, or even alone, 7 o'clock, you're at the gym in the morning.
That was your time.
That's the first workout.
Yeah.
You had to go back at 5:30.
Oh, you did doubles.
Oh, yeah. We always did doubles.
Is that right?
And before a show, 2014, I competed. And I was training twice a day, every day for that show. That's the only way you get in the top shape is train twice a day. An hour in the morning, an hour at night. And that's the only way to be in this crazy, crazy conditioning.
Okay, so when you were doing that, how did you break up your body parts? Like if you did like, I mean, give me an idea. Just give me an idea of one day that you did your doubles body
parts. Each muscle group's going to be twice a week, sometimes three times a week. Imagine that. Chest three times in a week.
Yeah.
Legs, no more than twice. Back, three times for sure.
So okay, when you did a morning workout.
I would do chest.
Okay, chest. And you come back in the evening and do
triceps.
Oh, so you're working one body part then?
Yes.
Oh, I got you.
One body part each time. But it adds up because you don't get a day off. There is no rest day. When you're training for a show, there's no rest day.
Right.
Competitors training. So what are you going to do? So you make sure you train every day, twice a day. The diet's on point. Before, I had this super fast metabolism. It helped me a lot. Now I have no metabolism. So I have to diet extremely hard.
Isn't that amazing?
You know? Yes.
Yeah.
But I can get that same conditioning, but I have to really work now.
Yeah.
Now the work starts. It's 62, you know.
It's different.
It's different.
It's the way it is. That's just the way it is. No, I totally get that. In fact, I think, you know, as for all the amount of work that I put in, just like you, I would think that my metabolism would be banging a little bit more than it does, you know, but it just doesn't.
We're human. It starts slowing down.
It's a fight.
My dinner is half a chicken breast and about 2 spoons of rice.
That's your dinner?
That's my dinner. I don't eat.
Yeah.
Because I know I can gain size and fat really fast.
Yeah, that's
what I know.
It's a cruel joke.
It really is. Because, man, I used to go in an athlete's meeting before the show with cake in my hand.
Yeah.
I'd say, hey, guys, you want some cake?
Yeah, right.
They hated me.
Yeah. You want some cake?
I show you on stage tomorrow.
Oh, God. How well did you know? Well, first of all, before we get off Robbie was also a great poser, wasn't he?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yes. Great poser.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Great shots.
Yeah. It's just shot.
The double bicep and the double bicep from the side and the side sewn in the costal serratus.
Yeah.
I mean, those shots just untouchable. They just.
Yeah.
Because you got cuts on top of cuts.
Yeah.
So when I look at a picture, I'm looking for density, separation, and cuts on top of cuts. You can see striations on top of striations. That's when you know in shape. Not semi-shape. Semi-shape is for guest posing. In my day, you got to be down to zero. It looks like you're walking dead.
Yeah.
You got to look great under the light.
Yeah. Oh, man. Boy, there's just something, you know, I've talked about this before. I played the traditional sports when I was coming through college, football, basketball, baseball, you know.
Right.
But nothing got me more stoked than bodybuilding did, Tony. And I don't know, man, I think it was because you create this thing.
Yes.
That I really didn't think. When I first walked into Gold's Gym, at this point, I was training for you know, 7 or 8 years. And my first response when I walked in there, I said, oh, hell no. I could never look like that. You know, that was my first thought. It was almost disheartening.
Right. Yeah. I had to step the guys in a magazine, and you see them posing on TV, and you go, but then when you see them in person, like, oh, man.
Yeah. You know, but then once all the shock wore off, I guess, I thought, wait a minute. You know, and that's when I got the day that I did my first show. Mm-hmm. It's like I never turned back, Tony. It changed my whole life, and to the point where it changed the direction that I was going. At that time, I'm Portuguese, and in my culture, we were big in Portuguese do a lot of dairy. They're in the dairy business.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
And in my culture, it's like the next generation, it's left to them. Well, this was supposed to be left to me at this point, at this stage of the game, when I decided to get into this bodybuilding thing.
Right.
I knew in my heart that I didn't want that. Where I got my buzz from,
it was a gym.
Well, it was being an athlete, you know, and okay. part of that.
Right.
And once I competed, Tony, I said, because I promised myself, I didn't go on and in college because I let an injury stop me. You know, I kind of use it as an excuse when I look back. I thought, you know, maybe this is a sign for me not to go forward. I'll just go back to the old dairy where we're supposed to be, you know, type thing.
Right.
Well, I knew that after a few years, I thought, man, this is no way. I don't like going to work. And, you know, and I promised myself, I said, if I ever get a chance, I get that buzz. Mm-hmm. Rocky talks about that, something in the basement, you know.
Yes.
I'm not going to question that. I'm just going to jump. Well, after that first bodybuilding competition, I thought, okay, this is it. Nobody was doing personal training or anything like that in my town back in those days, man. No one. I mean, and I thought, but it didn't matter. It's like, you know, and now I understand why my first wife freaked out. You know, I come home one day, I said, hey, I'm leaving the dairy. You know, it was pretty stable.
Right.
And you're going to do what now? A personal trainer? What the hell?
What is that?
You lost your mind or what? You know, I mean, even back then, people would ask me, and they said, well, and I got the idea about doing personal training actually from people asking me about my own training. They come up with me and ask me questions. Okay.
You know? Right.
And I thought, well, I can make a living out of this, even though no one else is doing it. I would have people ask me when I was trying to get clients. They said, aren't you just more than an aerobics instructor? What's a personal trainer? Seriously.
Aerobic instructor.
Aerobic instructor. Nobody heard of personal trainer, but Tony, I followed my instinct, and I followed my passion.
Okay.
That day that I did that changed my whole life. That first bodybuilding show that I did when I was 27,
right,
my life forever, because I became a personal trainer. I got into the industry. I've written 6 or 7 training courses. You know, I didn't make my living as a competitor. I got up to the world, and I was okay.
Right.
But I made my living in other ways, and yes. I've had personal training studios for 38 years. I've made money off the industry. And I'll tell you something, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And even to the point where I told my kids, I got 2 boys now that are older, 38 and 36. But I told them way back when, I said, look, it's especially because of the fact that I did this. I said, do something when they graduated from college, mm-hmm. which I did not. I said, do something that you have passion for. Do something that means something to you.
Yes.
And I don't think you can go wrong.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Totally, 100%.
Yeah. So, I mean, like with you now, you've come through the ranks. And did you do anything, like, before you got into the personal training thing, did you do something else in between?
No. I did seminars and exhibitions and competed for all those years.
So you basically came full circle then. Now you're the mentor. You're the person that's instructing people.
Yes.
You're the person that's shortening that learning curve.
Right. I'm giving it back. Yes.
That's huge.
My knowledge, my 45 years of knowledge.
That's huge, you know, because so much of this is, like with me, it was learned through the magazines, you know. Yeah.
That's and all you had was a magazine.
That was it. And you know, of course, Albert Einstein said it best when he said, real knowledge is through experience.
Yes.
My dad said it in a different way. He said, it's hard to replace experience, you know. And, you know, as you get older, that's one of the things, if you become a student of the game, you start learning this. Stuff yes. like that. And when yes. you're around, that's when you know somebody really knows their stuff. I didn't know that. When my dad was telling me that, I'm going, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. But he was so right, you know. And now I'm in the same spot as you are. I've been now doing this now for years, coming full circle. And it, I don't know about you, it's been an amazing ride. And I am so lucky that I fell into bodybuilding, or bodybuilding found me.
Yes.
You know?
I am blessed.
Oh, man.
I got into the sport by everything by chance, by accident. It's in my book. I don't want to keep mentioning it, but you'll see in that book where just things happen that just couldn't naturally happen.
Yeah, and I kind of...
Hollywood couldn't write it.
I can't wait to bring you back on to get... I want to just really just talk only about that, you know, in another interview. But I know I looked through that a little bit, and I think like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that bodybuilding in a way almost found you, and I think it almost saved your life. Would you say that that's true?
It did, and I wrote about it, how it saved me.
Okay, and you, this is how you and I are similar, because bodybuilding saved my life. Yes. And maybe what you don't know is almost eight years ago now, I had 3 strokes in 3 weeks that paralyzed me, Tony. Oof. Yeah, and I have to tell you, and I know you can relate to this, I chose not to go to a physical therapist, because I went to one, you know, I'm all jacked up now at this point, and I went to, you know, like a consultation, if you will.
Right.
And I could tell from that first consultation that this physical therapist wanted to get me functional, and I said, no, I want to get myself 100%. That's a major distinction.
Right.
And I thought, if I didn't have my background in this sport from all those years, of course, you know, our bodies are our labs, and we know everything and anything about nutrition and training.
Right.
I wouldn't have made that move, but I chose that path, and mm-hmm. I fully recovered. I made a comeback. Doctor says I was a miracle, right. But I said, you know what? It was because of this sport that I learned. Bodybuilding was a sport that saved me. And this is where, when I saw that in your book, I thought, you and I, you know, we have something similar in that this sport saved us.
Yes.
You know, and it really did. And, yeah. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about your book the next time we do this. When you said that you chose wrestling, you chose wrestling. What made you choose wrestling? Just out of curiosity. I know you're a skinny kid.
But yeah.
Why the hell did you choose wrestling?
Honestly, I had never really got into sport or even followed sports at all until I saw the great Muhammad Ali in person.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Did you see him in a fight? Or like?
No. Getting out of a limousine back in 1973, I'm walking home, and there's a limousine pull up in front of a high school, and with the full police escort, and I go, who is that? The President of the United States?
Oh, man.
Like a kid, so I'm running as fast as I could.
Yeah.
To get to the limo. So the door opens, and Muhammad Ali steps out.
Holy crap.
Blue suit, tie. He was like massive. He was huge.
Well, he was like, what, 6'4", something like that?
Yeah, at least 6'2", 6'3". No, but he was like his shoulders.
Yeah, bigger than
you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't look that big on television. Yeah. I'm like staring up at him. So, yeah, he motivated me to get involved in sports. I was too slow. I couldn't run. I was too short. But I was strong.
Yeah.
My friend says, you should go out for the wrestling team. Yeah, that's a great idea. I never wrestled before. So I got my butt kicked often, because to be a great wrestler, you have to start when you're 4 years old.
I agree.
Start that young. You don't go when you're, you know, teenager already. So that's how I got into wrestling. And from seeing this guy in person, you know, you see someone on television is one thing, but when they're standing in front of you as a kid, after what I had gone through as a child, this was like a god to me.
Yeah.
So we walked to the door, hit him on the shoulder. He went inside, and I've been stoked ever since.
So you actually touched him?
Yeah, I did. I had to touch him. I just had to touch his shoulder before he went to the school.
How old were you? Yeah. How old were you then?
12, 13.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's like seeing Elvis Presley, you know, back in those days.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was like a god.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen anyone like that in real life. You see him on TV.
Yeah.
So I got on the team, and like I said, I got my butt kicked a few times and tore my knee up. And the doctor said to me, go to the gym and rehab it yourself. It's 1974. Then, you know.
A doctor said that to you?
Yes, that's all he said. I said, okay. And he goes, oh, your career is over. Wrestling is over. Being athletic is over. The knee's really bad, he goes. So I go, okay.
Yeah. Did you have to have a... 6 months.
We had the operation. I got a big, massive scar. I still have it. My knee still hurts today. That knee, I had a full career on a bum knee in bodybuilding.
Wow, would have never known that.
Right.
I mean, even like I didn't see any weak, you know.
No, my quads were balanced well. Yeah. My knee still hurts. It hurt all the way through the career.
Wow. I
was falling in pain.
So, like, that being said, are you doing anything for inflammation? Like, because, you know, your body is just, especially as you get older, you got to deal with that stuff.
Got a lot of inflammation in the joints.
And how do you deal with that?
I stretch a lot.
Oh, you do?
Stretching is really good. So, and I got a guy who works on me. It's called it's like chi.
Uh-huh.
He breaks up the scar tissue.
Oh.
Inside the muscles. You know, we have a lot of scar tissue in the muscle, tearing it out.
Yeah.
And it grows and it spreads after, you know, 40 years.
Yeah.
So he works on me quite a bit.
What about your diet?
My diet's very clean, you know, high protein, low carbs.
And yeah, you're one of the few that actually probably is still following your diet like that, would you say?
Yes.
When you say low carbs, how many grams a day?
I don't count. I've never counted anything. Okay. I just put it on the plate and go, okay, it's too much. Take it off.
Well, you know, because I'm sure that you know this, because I'm the guy that learned that, you know, who Mauro DiPasquale is, because he was.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mauro and I wrote the book together called The Anabolic Diet. I don't know if you ever heard or saw that book.
You know, this wanted us to do part of that diet.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, right.
Okay, so I know all about that kind of stuff because I actually work better on a free fatty acid metabolism. That's why I was asking you, because the distinction between those two metabolisms, and again, I'm not trying to tell you anything, but I'm just saying this is what I learned with Mauro, and being, I was the guinea pig.
Right.
Not the guinea pig, but the test subject on that anabolic. Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, the distinction between being, your body has two metabolisms. Mm-hmm. You have a glucose metabolism, you have a free fatty acid metabolism. Mm-hmm. The distinction is, just to keep it safe, you taking in 30 grams of carbs or less, mm-hmm. your body flips its metabolism and it starts burning fat as its main energy. That's what they were trying to do with McMahon and say, you can overcome some of this stuff. And I think part of what happened is that a lot of the guys didn't really understand. Again, this is just stuff that I've heard over the years.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't
there. But they didn't really understand that concept. And they thought, well, I'm eating low carbohydrates like you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say you're probably, even though you're eating low carbohydrate, you're still probably on a glucose metabolism. I think you would know if you're on a free fatty acid metabolism.
Yes, I would know. Yes. You know?
And so that's what they were trying to do. Mauro and I had already written that book, The Anabolic Diet. It's still on the market. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. And there's a whole way to eat that way. And there's, you know, in 3 days you can flip your metabolism and you can eat. 2 days, you could actually go off that diet and still be in a free fatty acid metabolism because it takes 3 days to flip over. There's a whole thing behind it. I think that got lost in translation, I believe, with some of the guys.
I think so.
Because when you're so used to eating, most people are on a glucose-type metabolism.
Yes.
And so they really didn't get to give it a fair shot. I don't know that it would have made any difference at the end of the day. But I'm always curious about people's diets and you sounds to me like you've been eating clean for years and you still do that.
Yes. Same thing. Nothing changed.
Yeah. Are you pretty routine about, do you kind of eat the same stuff?
Or yes.
Do you have a lot of fluctuation?
No, I eat the same thing for 45 years.
You know something, Tony? And the thing about that is this is what, and I'm sure that you did. Do you train competitors very much, or do you work with more of the average public?
The average public.
Average public.
Very few competitors, yes.
Because I know that this has happened with you. I've had lots of people over the years, and they come and they say, I want to compete. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is they like the idea of it more than the reality of it. And I try to tell them that before they ever start. Because it's a waste of my time, but it kind of is because I know where it's going to end up. You know,
right? It's a lot of work. Strict diet.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work,
and it's a lot of repetition, and a lot of people don't realize that. And I learned this from Top. It's like you just got to keep beating the hell out of your body through this, you know, this repetition and routine.
Right.
And yet, what's on the market today, from my perspective, I talk about this in my posts. I talk about people, a lot of people have SOS. It's a shiny object syndrome.
You're right.
And they're constantly looking for the next thing, the next
trick, yes.
Right?
Yes. That's the problem. That is a huge problem today. I just go back to basics. I just do what I do. The body didn't change in the last 70 years.
I know, huh?
You're still in top shape. keep it basic. Keep it simple. It's not complicated.
That is such a true statement. These old sayings have meaning. There's a reason for these old sayings, right?
Right. Yes.
And physiologically, here's what happens. And this happens with the CrossFitters in that community. Your brain is an organ that acts like a muscle.
Yes.
So what happens is the old brain starts adapting to this. They start getting tired of their routine. The brain does before the physiology actually gets the full benefit. So these guys that have SOS or ladies who have SOS, they're constantly changing. They're changing too often, and they never get the full benefit.
Exactly. Thank you.
Right?
Give something a chance to work. Yeah. I tell clients all the time, we're going to stick with this for a while.
Yeah.
But they're doing that over there, and this is crazy. What we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to see if this is going to work. Give it time to work.
Exactly.
You can't change every 2 weeks to something new. Like,
there you go. We're both saying the same thing. And from what I learned, because I'm the type of person that becomes a student of the game, and right. I want to know everything to the nth degree. It's nauseating, to tell you the truth, but that's just the way I am. That's the way I'm built. So what I learned is I learned how the physiology works. Mm-hmm. It takes about 21 days for your body to adapt to a training regimen. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is, and I wrote in some of my blogs, I said, the plateau is a necessary evil. You have to know how to use the plateau because that inside that plateau, your body is going to be inside that plateau starting in about 21 days. Mm-hmm. At about the 6 week mark, you got to make a subtle change now to get yourself back out of that plateau because your physiology is designed to adapt to its environment.
Right.
So when it becomes death to you, the plateau is when you just keep doing the same thing and you don't come out of that and do a little something that's a little different, not drastically different.
A tweak it. Yes.
You need to tweak it.
Throw a wrench. I can't throw in another wrench. I do it with my clients all the time. I shock their mind and body every time they come in. Say, oh, you changed your workout today. Yeah, I did for a reason.
Yeah. Well,
and shock your system again.
Exactly. But you don't want to keep shocking it over and over again.
No. Just once in a while, just like.
And then once you do that, you need to get back into that routine to where your body enters into that plateau. That plateau, Tony, is where all the results are made. That's when your physiology now is fully adapting to your routine.
Yes.
But the SOSers out there and these idiots that are out there, I hate to say it, on social media that don't know what the hell they're talking about. And that's part of the reason why I'm back to start talking like this. The guys like you who know is that they're just, they're like, change, do this one. And they're doing them all half-assed and they're all, they do nothing right at the end of the day.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, but that's what I've seen.
I agree with you quite a bit. I just look around, just kind of shake my head sometimes.
Oh.
I just go,
And the crazy thing about that is that the unsuspecting client, they don't really know sometimes how dangerous of an environment that their trainer is putting them in.
They don't know. You're right. And they did trust them 100% these days.
Yeah.
I get that. Right.
So.
They don't know. It's dangerous sometimes. And yeah. I see it. I don't say anything, but I see it. I see everything.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I opened up a bunch of these little personal training studios. That's where I stayed in the personal training industry. And my studios are all pretty small. They're like no more than 3,000 square feet. So compared to like a Gold's, they're tiny, right?
Right, okay.
Nobody comes into my gym and does training on their own. It's all supervised.
Good.
And so I had a bunch of them at one time. I just have one now. But Tony, I did ask you before, like on time of the day that you train. I've been that person who gets. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning every single morning, and I don't have to do that anymore. But I'm such a trained animal from this sport.
Yeah,
it's just easier for me just to keep doing what I'm doing because if I try to train at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm screwed. It's going to take me a whole long time to learn that.
Right.
Yes. So talking about seeing everything. So now I have trainers that are in there and you know what? I will tell you, and I'm not being biased. I really am not. I think that I probably have some of the better trainers, at least in the area.
Okay.
And when I'm on my perch there, I have my bike that I get on every day after I do my workout, 4 o'clock in the morning. I do the same routine, then I do my cardio. And I watch my trainers train, and I'm very hard on them because I'm really about, like what you said, form and technique. You're only as good as your form and technique. Do it right.
Yeah.
Do it right from the beginning.
And get faster results.
Take your time. Do it right before you move on, right?
Yes.
And it's almost hard for me because they can't not live up to my expectations, not even my own trainers, you know? And yet they're doing a damn good job. I'm going to give them props.
Yeah. Yes.
But I learned this thing, like you, from a whole different arena and a whole different way. Because if you don't, you cannot possibly get to the levels that you did.
It's right.
You can't.
You cannot. No.
You know? I take that with me. And my clientele that that we see, 95% of the people is for fitness.
Yes.
I've trained, my background's in sports specific training, and I've trained Major League Baseball players that come in the off season and football players, and we have injuries, but most of the people are there for fitness and health, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I still bring that to what I bring to the table is this mindset of a damn bodybuilder who says, wait a minute, what do you mean you're only coming in three times this week?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or twice a week because you have a holiday. I just did a post today. I said, look, I'm calling it true serious growthers. That's, you know, we're known for serious growth.
Right.
If you're a serious growther, which just means if you're somebody like yourself, who's just a really dedicated and disciplined athlete, it doesn't matter that we have a Christmas Eve day or right. Christmas tomorrow. Get in there, do your damn workout. That's my mindset.
Every day is workout day, no matter what day it is.
Exactly. So we're on the same page then, right?
That makes me happy on Christmas Day. I get my workout in. I'm happy for the day.
Exactly. You know?
That's a good part of my day.
So this is what brings the mindset that I bring in. But it almost like, I heard an analogy one time. It was I think it was the Eagles. They were doing a documentary. And whoever the lead singer was, I can't remember now. He said, you know, when you're first into this thing, you're like biting the apple of life. And all of a sudden the apple starts eating you.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that in my own gym. I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, it's like, I keep seeing all these mistakes that are being made. And it's like, I'm really being unfair in a way because they're actually doing a pretty good job. But I'm looking for you to do it right every single time.
Yes. Perfection.
I just don't think that unless you're into the sport that you and I have been in, I don't think that people really get that, even the trainers.
No, they don't. They don't. They don't get it. I see some really good trainers at my gym, but they're off by that much. And I'm always
– Exactly.
I see that.
Yeah.
I see with the hands, the chin, the hips, everything. I see everything. And they're always off. They're good. I'm not saying they're bad.
Yeah.
They're off that much. That much means a lot.
Oh.
That means growth.
You know, it makes me feel a lot better that you feel the same way. Seriously, because sometimes I think, what an asshole I am. I mean, I'm just an idiot. I just can't let it go.
No. I mean, every rep and every set that I do, I want 100% out of it.
Yeah. Make every movement count, every single set, every single rep.
Yes. And I tell my client, I said, every rep counts. So why are you rushing? Slow down.
Beautiful.
Feel it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I get inside of their head. And I start to get to them. Now my clients could be trainers. Because now they go, you see that guy across the room? He's doing that wrong.
There you go.
I go, uh-huh. I go, you're starting to pick up on it.
Hey, you know who was an influence on me? And God, you talk about one of a kind. Did you ever get to know the Iron Guru, Vince Gironda?
I only met him once. And I have to tell you where I met him.
Tell me your story.
Backstage in Paris. At the Waba show, 1980, and Vince Gironda comes backstage with Sergeant Bray, and he looks at me and he goes, now that's a back. He turns and walks away. That's my only chance ever seeing Vince Gironda, ever speaking to him. That's the only time. I never went to his gym. I lived in LA all that time, and I never went to his gym. I'm kicking myself for that.
What a gigantic compliment he gave you. Let me tell you a Vince story. There was a guy named, I can't think of his first name. Last name was Green. He used to write for one of the muscle mags.
Okay.
God, I wish I could think of his first name. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I met him at the, I went to the Arnold Classic.
Okay.
And we were flying home. He was on the plane. I got to know him. And, of course, he told me he at that time was writing for one of the mags, but he was living upstairs in Vince's studio in North Hollywood.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I said, hey, well, of course, you know, I knew about Vince. And I said, hey, can I come? I'd like to come train at Vince's gym.
Yeah.
Well, he goes, okay. He says, so we set it up, Tony. This is when I started wondering what the hell is going on here. So I meet Bob Green is his name, Bob Green. Okay. And so I'm there, and he meets me. He meets me outside this gym, this studio.
Right.
And he said, wait here. I got to go ask Vince if it's okay if you come in to work out. So he's walking in there. I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is going on? Well, I learned about Vince. Let me tell you something. I tried to do a video with him because I've shot like hundreds of videos, you know, teaching people how to do stuff. I wanted to get Vince on tape, on video, because of what he did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So he had to go ask Vince, and Vince said, it's like the Godfather. He says, yeah, let him in. What the hell? Let him in.
He's a guru.
Shit. So I go in, you know, of course, this place, man, is low ceiling. If you knew anything about Vince, he didn't believe in any music, only weights, no cardio. Okay.
Old school.
Old school. Vince was big on, he said, it's not about the weight that you lift, it's about the angle in which you train the muscle.
Which I agree a lot with that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So he came from that. But look, Vince was a cranky old guy, man. He would be behind his desk or his cage back there, we called it, right? And this is before I knew much about Vince. I'm there. I'm just like in awe that I'm able to train in his gym, right? So I'm doing shoulders. Uh-huh. And I was pretty strong, you know. So I was going to go do the heavier weight. So I took the bench and I slid it over to the heavier weight. And all I hear from the behind the thing, put that son of a bitch back, he says to me. Well, first of all, I was mortified.
Right.
He says, if you're not strong enough to lift that damn weight, then don't lift it. But that's what he said to me. And that was just one of many stories, man. I mean, I heard about this guy, you know. And he, and another time was somebody, and this is going back to no music. Some gal came in and she sat down and was putting her shoes on. She had headphones on. She was listening to her own damn music.
Right.
I saw him do this. No exaggeration. She had headphones on like I have.
Uh-huh.
He walked up to her. Well, she was minding her own damn business, tying her shoes, and he lifts that earpiece off her ear. He says, if you want to listen to that damn music, get your ass outside or go down the street and train at their gym. He was like that. He was cranky and on me, and you know what? He liked me.
He liked you.
As it turned out, I went to the Legends dinner with him. They had a Legends dinner with Bill Pearl. And Jack Lane was there. I went with Vince took me. I had people coming up to the table, and they said, how in the hell did you get Vince to – how did he? You get him to bring you here? He doesn't like anybody. Vince was – man, he's a piece of work.
Was he?
Those are two Vince stories, man. Oh, I hit one more. I called him up one time. I got to know Vince pretty well. He goes, Costa, he goes, you know, I hate most people, but I like you. And I go, man, Vince, you have a weird way of showing this.
I know, right?
Yeah. And he was cranky at this point, 70 some years old. I called him up one day. I said, hey, Vince, how you doing? You don't give a damn how I'm doing. In other words, he was just saying, quit small talking me. Just go right to the point.
The bottom line.
The bottom line. Those are my three Vince stories.
Oh my God.
I learned quite a bit from that guy, man. He was pretty interesting. Really interesting character. But I guess now I've gone, you know, there a couple of times to see if it was still around, but it's all gone now. I mean, I think somebody took it over after him, or I think he had a son, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But there was another character of the industry, and he was so pissed off in those days because he said, you know, Lou Ferrigno, when Arnold came over, first when Arnold and those guys came over, they actually came to Vince's to train, and then they called it, then Vince said he was shipping over the hill to Wiederland because Vince was a purist. He didn't like all the hype and all the marketing and all the stuff that Wieder was doing. back then. You know, he would just, it was all about the training, and he didn't like all that other bullshit. You know, he just didn't like that. I don't know. But he definitely was one of the characters in the industry.
So they went to his gym first.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. But it was, you know, what was so cool about that that I'll never forget was the environment. All you could hear, Tony, was like clanging of the weights, clink, clank. Yeah. You could hear people just not talking very loud.
No.
You know, but they were there to work. They were there to work. Clank.
Yes.
Low ceiling, dingy.
Yeah. Like a dungeon. I'm kicking myself for never going there. I was in LA all that time, and I never went to Vince's gym.
Oh, man. I tell you what.
Thinking,
you know, unfortunately, I can never get Vince to behave and you know, be stable enough to do a video. I almost did it, but I couldn't. Even just be all of a sudden, he turned into this diva, you know, this high maintenance. It's like, shit, Vince, you don't know what you, I don't know if he didn't know what he had in his hands or if he just didn't give a damn, because I
kind of give a damn, he just didn't care.
That's just the way he was.
Sound like him.
Yeah. And he said, you know, my biggest concern is I'm going to die under a bridge. You know, that was Vince. God, the guy was, I don't know. I think he was like a genius and a crazy one at that, you know?
Yes. Yes. I think he was a genius. Yes.
Anyway, hey, listen, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up, man. I can't believe that I actually got to talk to you today, because you're that person, like you saw Muhammad Ali, man, to see somebody that you've been following all these years, and then to meet you, I knew that you were the real deal. I really appreciate you coming on.
It's been a pleasure being
Hey, will you come back and can we talk about your book? The book's name, go ahead and give us the name of your book. I know what it is, but I'll let you go ahead and introduce it. You have one.
It's Driven.
Yeah.
Driven. And it's about my childhood, where I really came from. That's the Deep South in Tennessee, and child abuse.
I saw that. Child abuse and neglect.
Yes. Yes.
Domestic abuse and neglect.
Yes.
And was this happening to you at a really young age?
From age 3 until 14.
I
was tortured every day.
Unbelievable. And look at you. Look what you turn out to be, man. Amazing. You're an inspiration. You're somebody that's teaching other people in a very positive way. What a great credit to you, man.
I appreciate it. I wrote the book to inspire other people to be able to tell their story. Because for 50 years, I kept it hidden.
Yeah.
From anyone. It was a secret.
That must have been eating you up at times.
It did, because I was never true to myself.
Yeah. Was the outlet for that, like, did bodybuilding help kind of release that a little bit?
Yes. Tremendously. Yeah. I trained like a madman.
Yeah.
But I only knew one way to train. You'll read about that. I only knew I was conditioned to train that way.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a guy named George Turner?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
He's a trainer.
Is that right?
Talking about crazy. George was crazy.
Really?
He was a great trainer. Without George, I would have never made anything.
Now, was he a trainer? Was he in L.A.?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, St. Louis. Oh, okay. I
was born and raised in Memphis.
Okay.
And we moved to St. Louis, and my wrestling coach took me to George Turner's gym one day. So I'm working out for 3 hours. It was a beautiful place. It was brand new. I was in heaven, like a kid in a candy store. I can do every exercise in here. I spent 3 hours training. And George came over and go, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" That's how the conversation started.
Yeah, well, there you
Get in my office, he said.
No kidding.
I was 18 years old. Get in my office.
Oh, man.
He says, "I'm going to train you. You'll be here tomorrow at 6 o'clock, and don't be late. Get the hell out of here."
Unbelievable.
But again, no music in the gym. George didn't allow music.
I wonder if he knew Vince.
No banging weights, no dropping weights.
Yeah.
No, none of that stuff.
None of that. Vince was like that too. None of that.
Walk over and give you a membership money back and say, "There's the door."
Yeah.
That was George Turner.
Hey, you know what? I think we need more of that. There's too much bullshit that goes on now, you know? Much coddling, and I like that. I like that kind of discipline. You need that accountability, Tony. Come on.
You really do. It built a foundation for me. So when I got to training with these pros, and I knew what to do already. I've been conditioned.
Yeah.
George prepared me for L.A.
Yeah.
I look back and go, George was getting me ready for L.A. because he knew I was going to go eventually.
Yeah.
If you want to be a champion, you have to go to California. You have to go to Venice.
Right, Venice.
You have to go to Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
And the day that I told him, oh, man, did hell break loose.
Is that right? He didn't want you to go?
You didn't want me to go. I was just
You're going to ruin yourself.
Right. You're never going to be nothing out there, he said.
Oh, shit.
You know, Dave Johns trained there. Shereen Renew trained there. Kenny Waller trained there. Phil Williams trained there. He trained all these guys. And we all went west.
Oh, man. So he had one guy, it didn't happen more than once to him.
Oh, man. So, that's how I – George Turner, no music. And he was loud and in your face.
Oh, I love it.
He had me squatting. I was squatting 10 sets of 10 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, up to 400 pounds. I weighed about 165.
Oh, crap, man. You're strong.
I was very strong.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And George was standing and counting every rep.
That one doesn't count.
That don't even count. Another,
Pearson.
Just deep enough in that squat.
Shit. Hey, where do you train your clients now in Vegas?
At Kilos. At first, it was City Athletic Club. Uh-huh. Just transitioned over to what it's called Kilo Club. Kilo.
Oh, okay. Is it like a huge place? Is it like a big Gold's gym?
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. It's about 30,000 square feet. It's well equipped. Brand new stuff.
Yeah.
In Summerlin, which is kind of west of the city down there.
Oh, okay.
Great gym. And, you know, bodybuilding is very popular out here. You got a lot of gyms. A lot of competitors live here.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of. And they have like maybe 10, 12 NPC shows here every year, which is a lot.
Yeah. What took you to the Natural Olympia? Did you have some competitors there that you were working with?
No, I was in town and I had a friend. She was competing, and I said I'm going to go support her.
Oh yeah, okay.
Down, yeah. So
yeah,
but there is a possibility I might compete next year.
Oh. Are we teasing?
Universe. I was sitting there watching the show and I go, okay. I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
The thing is, my body holds up for another year. You know what I mean? Because this hurts and that hurts. And if I could keep it together, I want to compete in the universe next year.
Beautiful. You know, I interviewed on my podcast the winner this year, Ricardo.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I interviewed him. Nice guy, man. Guy's like, yeah, really nice guy. I gave the, I don't know if you remember, I gave a check to my, our company sponsored the event for the guys.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I've been out of the industry for so long. I thought, well, you know, I'll just try this this Olympia.
Yes.
Boy, I tell you what, I was really impressed with the way they ran that. For me, it was just like, I like the camaraderie.
Right.
Among the athletes. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yes, I noticed that. It was like a family.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's kind of like the old days, because all the guys at Gold's Gym back in the day, we'd go and have dinner together, movie together, just hang out.
Yeah, and I couldn't figure out what the hell this thing was like, I can't figure out why I'm liking this so much. And then it occurred to me, it's like what you said, not only is it family, I could tell that these people were doing it for the love of the game.
Yes.
And I just like that. That turned me on when I saw that, you know, with the competitors.
You could see the passion there, yes.
And they came in damn good shape.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did.
There were a couple of weight classes. They're like the women. I mean, it was like, how can you judge that in that length of time?
Right.
So many quality competitors. So that was impressive, you know.
Top shape.
Anyway, but I would really love to, if you would, bring you back sometime whenever you want.
Okay.
And I just want to talk about your book, if that's that. Does that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Yes.
Yeah. It's on Amazon, if you don't mind me saying.
Right, I bought it from Amazon.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, that's where I bought it, you know. But anyway, Tony, thank you again for coming out. Appreciate your time. I really do.
Thank you.
Our paths will cross again at another, maybe another Olympia or
whatever. Yes.
Because if you're ever out into, if you're going down to the LA area, you know, let me know and maybe we can hook up again, whatever.
Okay.
All right, man. You look fantastic. I'll talk to you again sometime.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, Tony.
All right. Thank you.
See ya.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.